Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. We were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Elizabeth Dutton, you know what's ridiculous?
Yes, I do, Zarin Burnett. You know what's ridiculous? Chet Hanks.
The progenitor of white boy summer. Yes, he is ridiculous. No offense, Tom and Rita. But also, consider a criminal gang of nuns who say, you know what, forget the church. Let's go buy a castle in the south of France and run away forever.
I like it.
I know. They just go on the run like big-time criminals. And this is their story. If you have the power of, like, you know, God on your side, who can stop you?
No one. Only God can judge you.
I'm Zarin Burnett, and welcome to Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free. And always 100% ridiculous. Elizabeth, this episode, I want to talk to you about nuns. Now, we both went to Catholic school, so we may have some opinions about this. But this story, I don't think you're going to see it coming. Yeah. So imagine you're in Belgium, right? And you're a nun, and you're really pissed off with the church. You have a convent. You have all these holy relics, all this really valuable artwork. And you're like, you know what? We don't need all this. So you decide to, like, liquidate and cut and run. How great would that be?
Amazing.
Right? Okay, picture it. 1990. You're in the picturesque European town of Bruges. Do you know Bruges? It's like that from the movie In Bruges, like with Colin Farrell.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's like a Luxembourg style, but it's Belgian, you know, cutesy little European town. It looks somewhat like it's post-medieval, right?
Sure.
Okay. In the center of Bruges, there is a convent. This convent has been around for 600 years. And since it's now in the center of Bruges, it is hyper valuable. So the Catholic Church is like, well, yeah, we got all these old nuns sitting there in this convent in Belgium. Almost all of them are over 80 years old. They're not getting any new young nuns to come into the order. We'll probably need to break up this order. So let's see, how do we divvy up what these nuns have? Well, That's the plan from the bishop's take, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the nuns, when they hear word of this, they're like, wait, hold up. We spent all these decades building up all this value in this convent, maintaining it, creating all these assets, collecting this artwork, housing these holy relics. And what is our reward? At the end, you're just going to take all this stuff and give it back to the church and then just separate us out, scattered to the winds? Uh-uh. We're not into it. So they hear these rumors that the bishop plans to break up the order. They decide to work with their handyman and make him their financial director, and they start quietly selling off all of their property for 2 years. They don't let anybody know what they're doing. They sell off all of the valuable artwork. They sell off the holy relics. They start selling off property until finally the bishop catches wind. Now, what do you think the bishop's response is going to be?
Oh, he comes down hard. Bishops don't play around.
No, not at all. So here we are in January of 1990. These sisters are called the Order of the Poor Clares. They sell their 600-year-old convent for $1.4 million. That's 1990 money, which would be about $2.8 million now.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell their real estate to a local consortium of textile manufacturers, right? So these big business people get their hands on the convent. They take the proceeds, this $1.4 million, plus all the money they've also gathered from selling off the holy relics and the artwork. So they got more than $1.4 million. They got a few million. So they go and they buy a castle in the south of France. They buy a farmhouse in the south of France. They buy a fleet of Mercedes sedans. They buy a Cadillac Seville. They buy 11 racehorses. And they break. They decide, like, this is it. The big day arrives in January of 1990, and now, for me, I like to imagine they wake up that morning, the sun is shining, they know what they're going to do. They start loading up into their fleet of brand new Mercedes. Now, the one thing about these Mercedes, you have to picture them. These are like late 80s Mercedes, that classic, right? You would see this like, I don't know, in cons, like just lines of celebrities getting out of these.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have this rental limousine Mercedes that they take. It looks like something the Saudi royalty would roll in. So imagine the eight nuns leaving their convent like 5 a.m. in the morning when they normally get up. They load up in the Mercedes limo, and then they also have purchased an ambulance. Why do they need an ambulance?
In case they wreck one of the Mercedes.
Oh, very responsible nuns.
Right? Well, nuns are responsible.
Known
those
for
late, those late 80s Mercedes,
mm-hmm.
It's such a classic body design.
Oh, yeah.
I had one of those for a while.
How'd you like it?
I loved it.
Right?
We called it the probable cause mobile because it was like a 380 sedan. I don't know. It was like an 88 or an 89. And the windows were blacked. And it passed. When I registered with the California DMV, they went out. You know, they look at the car mm-hmm. to make sure that the VIN is correct. They didn't say anything about the glass being too dark. I got pulled over all the time.
So these nuns have a fleet of probable cause mobiles,
mm-hmm.
and they also have a Saudi royalty limo, and then they have pulling up in the caboose of this like caravan is a ambulance that they purchased for 93-year-old Sister Agnes. Now, Sister Agnes doesn't walk, she can't see, and she can't hear. But she's going to make the run to the south of France.
Yeah.
So they get her own ambulance, so that way she has all the medical attention she'll need, and they cut. And that's when they make their run for the south of France.
Why do I feel like Sister Agnes was probably like a real firecracker?
Oh, definitely.
Like in the day. She's probably the feistiest of them all. She's refusing to die.
Yeah, oh, you're completely. And also, not just that, refuses to miss out on the fun. She's like, I may be next to death, but I'm still on this side of the grass. We rolling.
Yeah, she's like, pop the IV in, let's go.
Yeah.
Wait, so they have an ambulance. Did they have to hire like a crew of...
I read a bunch of French newspaper story accounts. There is no mention of a medical staff attending to her. I think they just wanted to have the defibrillator at hand.
Sure. So they probably, and she probably had to be reclined, and they had another nun driving.
Yeah.
Like whoever's the best driver had to drive the...
Well, also it could have been their man, Ronnie Crabb, who was originally the groundskeeper, fix-it man, and driver.
Mm.
So he very well likely could have been the driver of the ambulance.
Ronnie's at the wheel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ronnie steady rolling, right? So let's... Let's see.
Were they wearing habits?
That's a good question from our producer, Professor Emeritus Dave Kustin, Esquire. Were they wearing habits?
They were wearing habits. They're rocking. These are Belgian nuns who are like basically the equivalent of Orthodox nuns. So these nuns are, they live in medieval lifestyles. They get up like 4 in the morning. They go in the water, all the animals. They collect eggs from the locals who they then trade basically spiritual grace with for their like sustenance. And they live without any of the modern necessities you would think of. So they have no central heating, no central air. They have cold water pumps for all their groundwater. These are women who are basically living in central Bruges next to a place called the Lake of Love, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, even though they are in a basically very modern part of the city, they themselves live in almost complete medieval standards.
Were they cloistered, do you think?
There's no mention. They are an order of nuns that are dedicated to a life of absolute poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found interesting about this is, and I didn't know this, did you know that priests do not have to take a vow of poverty?
Mm-hmm.
Nuns do.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that priests do not have to take a vow of chastity? But nuns do.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah. Turns out that this is a common misconception. So according to FranciscanMissionaries.com, one of, and I, right, FranciscanMissionaries.com,
is that
they have a dating site. Quote, one of the most common misconceptions about the Catholic priesthood is that all priests take a vow of poverty. In fact, most do not. They make, quote, promises of obedience to their bishop, chastity, and to pray the liturgy of the hours. Now, compare that to nuns. Meanwhile, in convents, this is from the Washington Post, in convents across the country, elderly women who have dedicated their lives to serving God sometimes spend their last days subsisting on welfare benefits, unable to afford prescription drugs, or even a timely burial. I got one other quote I'd like to give you about nuns, just to put this in context. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Quote, nuns, this is from the Washington Post, are usually paid about half of what is made by typical secular workers. So the people who are like, you know, the admin at the church who's like working at the rectory, they make more than the nuns, about twice as much. Now, returning to the quote, as religious orders of nuns look to younger sisters to support the eldest in their final years, they're finding that the stipends that they receive do not cover their costs. And with a dramatic decline in vocations for nuns in the Catholic Church since 1965, basically since Vatican II, there is even less money coming in to meet the needs of the aged nuns. So we have a huge bias in the Catholic Church where they are, the priests do not have to have these vows of poverty, vows of obedience to their bishop or whatever, and the nuns do.
Yeah.
So sounds about accurate, right?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. So let's put a pin in that, and we'll come right back with more from these rogue nuns who I am rooting for.
Me too. Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like, full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply. As you know, the world can be a dangerous and unpredictable place. With every crime I've studied, I've learned one thing. Your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. You don't want to worry. You just want peace of mind. That's why I recommend Simply Safe Home Security. For every ridiculous robbery and theft we talk about, it's pretty obvious the crimes could be avoided with a solid security system. A good home security system keeps people prepared and aware. Simply Safe is that system. It was named Best Home Security Systems 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. And it doesn't just protect your home from crime, it also alerts you to fire, floods, and other emergencies. They offer sensors and cameras backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. There are no contracts, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And we're back. Now, did you know in 1990, the idea of nuns going rogue and criminal was kind of in the air?
In 1990?
Yeah, there was actually... 3 months after these Belgian nuns went on the run, there was a movie called Nuns on the Run, starring former Monty Python, Eric Idle, and a British actor, Robbie Coltrane, where they portray nuns who go undercover in a convent after stealing a bunch of money from their old criminal gang and then trying to make it to Brazil. So this was kind of like a zeitgeisty thing.
But I remember that.
You remember that, right? You remember that movie? It was not a great movie. It was fun, whatever.
It was my favorite movie.
I take it all back.
Still is. I have 8 copies on DVD.
So it's your Citizen Kane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my, what, yeah.
So.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you could go the rest of your days without having seen it and not really miss anything.
Got it.
But at the same time, it's better than dental surgery.
True.
So there is that. Let's focus on how this came to be of these nuns going on the run. Now, for the movie, obviously, it was a screenwriter. But for these actual nuns on the run, their inspiration was the aforementioned Ronnie Crabb. Now, Ronnie Crabb, who's got just a great name for the type of person he is basically this, I don't even quite know what to call him because he's not just a con man. He comes to the church as recommended by the bishop. He's a protege of a friend of the bishop. So the bishop says, hey, I got a job for this kid. Kid goes and starts working at the convent. He's their lawnmower guy. He's their fix-it handyman guy. He's their driver. He's their extra hands. But he also, for whatever reason, seems to be charming. Now, although he is a 30-year-old Belgian man and most of these nuns are in their 80s, they somehow get along. And over time, he convinces them that they're being done dirty by the church. And he's like...
because they probably were.
Oh, he's not wrong. That's the great thing.
Does he wear short cut-off jeans when he does the lawn?
Can't you just see him out there?
Totally.
Like Joe Dirt, but in Belgium.
But like a heavy sweater.
Like a wool
shorts.
Sweater.
Yeah, and then boots.
I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
He's a, like... I don't know. Like, I kind of picture him like the star of a bad summer teen comedy where he's the villain kid, you know? This is like him before he's in the movie.
Okay, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
This is like what he was doing before he became a bad executive.
His origin story?
Yes, exactly. So Ronnie Crabb is hanging out with the nuns, and he starts like trying to teach them about modern life. This is according to Ronnie Crabb. He starts, you know, explaining to them that there are these tastes of pleasure that they have not known, and they start to listen to him. And apparently, the Mother Superior, Sister Anna, she decides, you know what? Screw the church. The bishop is trying to break us up after all we've done. Ronnie Crabb's right. We are going to sell off all this stuff, and Ronnie Crabb is going to help us get out of town. And he's like, yeah, we're going to sell the convent. I got this castle down in the south of France. And
no, he had a castle in the south of France?
No.
He had a line on a castle.
He had a line on a castle in the south of France. Because remember, he hooks them up with the consortium of textile businesses that want to buy the convent.
I wanted to ask
you
about that.
So he knows this business community outside the convent.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the textile consortium. Did they want to turn the convent into like a factory? What were they going to do with it?
They had a couple ideas. They wanted to turn it into something for a factory, like a centralized factory. They also thought about, basically, it is 1990, so there was a housing boom at the time. They're thinking about turning it into, you know, updated housing where you take some like old structure and then you add some modern efficiencies and amenities and all of a sudden you make it into like a cool place to live. Mm-hmm. That was their plan, except for Belgian law indicated that that had to be a convent. It couldn't be anything else. So what did they do? They decided to try to make a plan to sell the convent as individual convents that somebody could live in. So they used the word convent and expanded its meaning and said, oh yes, you can come here and stay at this nonprofit association and own a part of the convent. So they basically tried to turn the convent into condos, but still call it a convent. The Belgians did not go for that.
That's like the worst investment idea I've heard.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. They, they're typical businessmen. You know, they're just like, oh, yeah, this value, I can see, I can sell this to 20 to 35-year-olds for huge profits. And they're like, nobody wants to live in a convent, dude. Even if it's next to the Lake of Love. They're like, no, this will be great.
Well, it's not, no hot water.
No, none of the modern amenities. But they would have added that,
assume. Well, yeah, I guess.
We assume. But.
Yeah.
So Ronnie Crabb is basically, he's got all of these nuns all lined up and fired up to go run to the way to the south of France. They sell off all the property, all the holy relics, all the art in the convent, and they make their move in January. They actually escape. They get away and they go down and they're living in the castle. And he was cool about it. He had a pool installed in the castle. They had all these luxury food in the refrigerator. He had them living large. He was selling them on the idea of you need to know these modern luxuries you've never known. And so they go for it. I mean, they had 11 horses. Now, there's some debate if the horses were for food or for pleasure, but regardless.
They're for pleasure.
Well, not that kind of pleasure. They're still nuns. I think they just wanted to ride them. I don't know if they wanted to ride them. Now, Ronnie Crabb has one problem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess what it is?
Crabs. it's all in the name.
I don't know.
Ronnie Crabb has one problem.
Mm-hmm. He's got the nuns down to the south of France. So what could possibly be his problem? Everything's working.
The bishop.
No, but good guess.
Thank you.
Very good guess. Turns out there is one nun who's like, I don't trust this dude. He's scandalous. Her name is Sister Clara. Now, Sister Clara is a novice nun. She's new to the order. She's still got the ardor of coming into the church. While the older nuns have been in the church and they're losing something, she has something to gain.
Yeah.
A lifetime in the church. So she goes to the Belgian authorities after she goes to the bishop and says, this Ronnie Crabb has been psychologically abusing the women. He's been physically abusing the women. He has extorted them. He has embezzled them. He has swindled them. And the bishop's like, this works for me. Let's take this to the police. So he then has Sister Clara write out an affidavit. She gives it to the Belgian authorities. The Belgian authorities are like, wait, what? They did what? And the bishop, he's like, yes, you have to do something about this because I told them they cannot sell the convent because it belongs to the Church of Rome. But the Church of Rome doesn't have police like that, so they can't stop them. So
yeah,
he has to go.
Yeah, they have the Swiss Guard.
Well, that's to protect the Pope. They don't have somebody going around like, you know, like CSI style.
Like a crack team that they send out.
Property issues for the bishop, yeah.
In like their little fancy lad outfits, and they just send them out to dispatch them to...
With like holy water kits and fingerprint kits.
Holy water and a squirt gun.
Holy water and a squirt gun. That is amazing.
It's action, action.
So the bishop goes to the police because he needs secular power in this instance. There's nothing he can do because the nuns weren't listening to him. So he goes to the cops, and the cops say, okay, they start an investigation. They sequester all of the funds that the nuns have put in the bank. They mm-hmm. still have access to the bank, so they lock out the sisters from their money.
Okay.
Then they go heading down to find where they are down in the south of France.
Mm.
Now, if I say south of France, what do you picture?
Lavender fields.
Lavender fields, right? So you figure like Provence, or maybe do you picture the French Riviera ever, or the wine country?
Yeah, yeah, I would say, or maybe they went to Arles.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All beautiful locations, sure. Right? They did not go there. This is not the south of France they went to. It shouldn't even really be called the south of France. It's more like they went to southern France. They ended up in the Pyrenees. Middle of nowhere, working class industrial town, in a castle outside of this working class industrial town called Tarbes. And it is basically right above the border of Spain in the Pyrenees Mountains.
Like Basque country, kind of?
Yeah, but not even the cool part. It's just a town that has been where the military used to make bullets. That's their big industry, bullet makers. So
but
the nuns are
castle.
Living. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, there's castles all over Europe.
True.
I mean, they just litter that place. But the nuns are in a town known for making bullets. That's where Ronnie Crabbe set them up to live out their golden years and enjoy the luxuries of modern life. So Ronnie Crabbe, they start to realize, may not have had their best interests at heart.
I believe Sister Clara.
And yep. Sister Clara is like, see, I told y'all not to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to go back to this bishop. The bishop is more than problematic. You know, like I'd say most bishops, you can make the argument these days are problematic, right? But this bishop, he has had an issue with the mother superior, Sister Anna. Now, Sister Anna and the bishop have been going back and forth for years about whether or not she's going to listen to what the bishop has to say. The bishop's always like, you guys at the convent need to do X, Y, and Z. And she's like, we'll do X. And he's like, no, you need to do X, Y, and Z. He's like, no. We have been doing this longer. So they have basically a power struggle. So he starts putting into play his plan to seize their convent. She recognizes it. She starts selling out. The nuns all make their plan, and they get away. Now, that was the story that Ronnie Crabbe's lawyers tell. Apparently, Sister Anna and the bishop had a heated moment just before they left town. The bishop shows up on a Tuesday night under the cover of darkness. He shows up at the convent. He has not been allowed into the convent. The convent, he has demanded their books because he knows he's heard that they're selling off stuff. He wants to see it.
Yeah.
And that they have to submit their financial accounting to him. They won't do it. So he shows up at the convent and demands to see them. Sister Anna's like, all right, come on in. So they go and they have their little talk. Now, this is like about 11 p.m., and according to Mother Superior, Sister Anna, the bishop tries one last time to convince her to side with him on this and have the sale of the convent canceled. And she's like, no, son, I ain't doing that. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I order you by the power of Rome to do this. This isn't me asking. The Pope wants this done. If you don't do this, you'll be dismissed from the church. And she's like, no.
He should have tried it by the power of Grayskull.
Or the power of Graceland. I mean, there's other more powerful entities.
But legit, like when a bishop or like a monsignor rolls up to your house mm-hmm. and makes those kind of demands. Like say, if you had skipped out on confirmation class a bunch of times
okay.
and the monsignor comes to your house.
Sounds like a personal story, but go on.
It's just, you know, hypothetically, if you kept skipping and... He comes to your house and says, by the power of the Church of Rome, it's intimidating.
Oh, that's what he's counting on.
Yeah.
But times have changed. So Sister Anna's like, I'm not into it. She recognizes what the bishop's trying to do. If he removes her as the head of the convent, She loses the authority to prove the sale. He gets power back over the sale. She recognizes this is not about the nuns or the convent. He's just trying to run a power game on her. So she's like, no. In fact, not only do I say no, but we're going to leave in the days to come. So the bishop, she tells him. They don't just run away. She tells him we're fleeing. And then a couple days later, they make their cut. So now the bishop, using this other sister, Sister Clara, and her like affidavit against Ronnie Crabb, has had the cops go down and retrieve the nuns. Meanwhile, the nuns have discovered down in the south of France, or southern France, that they are living in a place, once again, that has no central air, no central heat, but also has huge holes in the roof and is a stone building, and it's wintertime. So they're sitting there in a old-ass castle in January, freezing their old asses off.
Well, and Sister Agnes.
And poor Sister Agnes.
Poor little Sister Agnes.
She can't see, can't hear, can't walk.
But she's cold.
Darn cold. In fact, she's not long for this world, but she does get to enjoy her final moments with her sisters, free from the bishop. That is the good news about Sister Agnes.
I like it.
Now, as soon as the sisters leave and they have been alone, the bishop has been working with the powers that be, and he's the one who gets the police to go down there and grab them. Now, the question is where is Ronnie Crabb?
Oh, I think Ronnie Crabb's in the wind now.
Let's put a pin in that. I'll get back to you with that after this ad break.
Like it.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, back to our story. Ronnie Crabb. Where's our man, Ronnie Crabb?
Ronnie Crabb is at the premiere of Nuns on the Run in Piccadilly Circus.
Close, but no cigar. Oh. Nope, he actually was down in the south of France with the nuns, and he is arrested by Belgian authorities on February 27th and brought back to Belgium. He is arrested on charges of swindling, abuse of trust, elder abuse, and they seize the farmhouse, the castle, the fleet of cars. They seize everything and Ronnie Crabb. So now the sisters are living there still under seized property, so they no longer get to own it. Ronnie Crabb is taken away from them, and the bishop thinks, I've gotten everything I want back, right? Well, turns out no, because when Ronnie Crabb goes to court, he gets a lawyer who starts getting the nuns to turn on the bishop. So his lawyer has this one sister, Josephine. She's like, we did this all according to our right minds. We wanted to do this. Ronnie Crabb had nothing to do with this. The nuns start defending Ronnie Crabb. But it turns out that was not the best move, because although they defended Ronnie Crabb, Ronnie Crabb had actually been embezzling from them. There's $10 million missing out of all the money that they were able to gather up from their artwork.
Hold on, $10 million. So, and that's missing. So it means that there's still some.
Because the lawyer says all the money that they're trying to gather should be easily found. It's all in bank accounts or the houses or the cars. You just sell that stuff and you'll get your money back. Well, they do, $10 million short.
$10 million. So this is all like from the stuff that they sold inside the convent. Because what the convent was like one point something.
Yeah, 1.4 million. Yeah. And then, interestingly, the bishop and Ronnie Crabb have a backroom deal going on, because the bishop knows that Ronnie Crabb knows the commercial interest that he sold the convent to. The bishop just wants the property back. He doesn't really care about anything else. So he goes to Ronnie Crabb, you can get me that property back. We can make this good. And the reason we know this is Ronnie Crabb's lawyer keeps telling things that nobody should know except for the bishop when he gives his press conferences. He's like, well, Ronnie Crabb says the nuns will do this. Ronnie Crabb says the nuns will do that. Everything he says turns out to be true and all contingent upon the bishop. So it turns out that it looks like Ronnie Crabb and the bishop basically make a backroom deal. 39 days after him being arrested, charges are dropped. Ronnie Crabb is allowed to go free. What does he do? He writes a book about it where he casts himself as the libertine, a bon vivant who teaches these medieval nuns how to once again live. He calls the book, now forgive my Belgian on this, De Schat van de Arme Claren, which means the treasures of the poor Clares.
Oh.
Yeah. And in this book, he says, the book is, quote, about how the nuns who until then had lived in cloisters decided to set sail. A young man served as their guide. Yeah. I'll just let that statement sit there on its own.
So they were living in cloisters, so they couldn't even talk to each other.
No, because I don't think he's right about
cloisters,
that.
Cloisters, like, I in terms of the cells in which they slept.
Exactly. I don't think they were silent nuns. They didn't have that, because You'll understand later why that is. So this book then gets turned into a TV movie in 1994. It's called Un Ange Passé. Once again, forgive my Belgian. And that was made for Belgian and French television. I tried to find this movie because I wanted to see how he portrayed himself and what the medieval nuns look like. All I could find were absolutely terrible reviews. Apparently, people still, those who remember this movie, hated it. So...
Who played Ronnie Crabb in the TV movie?
Oh, a French actor that neither of us know.
Maybe it's a Belgian actor like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That would be hilarious. What a remake that would be. Mm-hmm. Jean-Claude Van Damme with a bunch of nuns and he teaches them how to live
and how to kick. He just does the splits.
They're just mesmerized by the power of his thighs.
Well, they'd never seen anything like that.
So 1 year after that TV movie comes out, the nuns... who, meanwhile, have been basically fighting with the church to stay together and to keep their order. They've been sequestered into two, not luxury apartments, but nice apartments in Bruges on the coast, right? So they're basically put up together. There's eight of them. They're staying in apartments where there's like kind of four and four. Mm-hmm. So they're not doing great. Sister Agnes passes away. They're allowed to stay together, which was a big important thing for Sister Anna, the Mother Superior. She's been fighting for that. After they lost her property, she did not want them to be scattered to the wind by the bishop. So she fights for that. And that's about the only thing they managed to pull off.
So is the diocese footing the bill for this? Or is this a larger order? Are there Sisters of the Poor Clare in other locations?
There are other Sisters of the Poor Clare, but they are a very small order relative to the other nuns. Uh-huh. And what they have is the church is primarily paying for their old age care, but the church doesn't really want to because these nuns, you know, did what they consider to be an illegal move and they still want to punish them.
Yeah.
So they basically make the Belgian state pay for them as old, infirmed people, which the Belgian state does for all of its old, infirmed sure. people. So they're basically living on welfare.
Okay.
So the church does not really look out for them.
Yeah.
Now, around that same time, after they see the TV movie come out, and then they know that there's this missing $10 million, they decide to sue Ronnie Crabb, and they bring him back into court. And he's found to be basically a bad dude, but is not guilty of embezzlement. They cannot nail him on this. He gets away again. Now, what does he do? What's the next time we see Ronnie Crabb pop up into headlines?
Whew, Ronnie Crabb. Okay, mm-hmm. So you got a con man swindler.
Mm-hmm. Belgian con man swindler.
Self-help guru?
Ooh, good close guess. Politics.
Well.
Kind of same stuff, you know? So he gets involved in what's called NVA. NVA is a Flemish conservative political party. Mm. They are kind of the Belgium first, like, far-right party. Now, this is part of a Flemish movement, and which is like a nationalist movement. Now, what do we know about these nationalist movement? They usually rely on religious conservatives. And having a party leader who has basically ripped off a bunch of aged nuns, not a good look for business. So
no.
The ultra-conservatives were like, look, Ronnie Crabb, you got to get out of here, man. Yeah. He's like, what? Just because I did a little jail time for ripping off some nuns? I was a young man. What? And they're like, no. And so he goes and disappears. And that's the last we hear of Ronnie Crabb.
Hmm.
Right? Now, the best part of this story... for me, at least, as a former Catholic, you know, because we both went to Catholic school.
Right.
Now, you had mostly nuns, right?
I did. The high school that I went to is an all-girls high school.
Okay.
And it was attached to a convent. And
oh, wow.
It was half of it was this giant, old, gorgeous building, mm-hmm. and half was the high school and half was the convent. And if you, like I did, tore your knee up in sports and had to wear an immobilizer, we got to use the elevator in the convent. And it was one of the old ones with the gate.
Uh-huh, they have to close it before.
It allowed me to walk through the convent every day to get, because it was a three-story building, in order to get to class. And
well, you got to see how the nuns lived then.
Yeah, and it was, they took the poverty thing seriously. They had really bare cots in their rooms, mm-hmm. and they had a parlor with a radio, and they were all, like, super Oakland A's fans.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It was all, well, we all were. Are. And they would listen to the games on the radio, and parents were always saying, well, we can buy you a TV. And they said, no, we don't want it. And then their kitchens were always bare, and parents would buy groceries, and they would take the bare minimum stuff out and donate the rest to the
nuns.
Food kitchens.
I'm telling you. They're the real heart of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. And like,
no doubt.
And the, you know, thing is, it's like they embody so much of what you want just in human beings. I mean, yeah, there are some like hard ass nuns.
Of course. No, they're the ones who throw chalk, hit you with the ruler. I mean, yeah, there's definitely the old school like fire and brimstone Vatican I nuns.
Sure, sure. But then I think my favorite are the zany nuns. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of zany nun teachers who, you know.
Yeah.
Sister Mary Elizabeth, my orchestra instructor. She's a crazy lady. She was so fun. Or Sister Paul Gerard, she had Pika?
Mm-hmm. She ate dirt.
She ate chalk.
Oh, she ate chalk. Okay.
In biology class. Mm-hmm. And no one really wanted to make her feel bad about it, but we all like to watch her drag her finger through the chalk tray and then suck on it. That was like the only food she was getting. But yeah, they were just, you know, they're good people.
Now, see, I went to all boys Catholic school, so we had, the rectory was priests. They lived on campus. And, it was not how you described the nuns living. At Jesuit, it was the exact same thing. You go over where the priests live, and it was like a chateau, basically it was like one of the Spanish homes where you have a courtyard in the middle, and there were these fruit trees, and it was just like really nice. And they, like, my favorite priest had a red sports car. I mean, these were like guys who had figured out a good scam. Yeah. I was like, damn.
Well, we had, you know, the thing is, you can't paint everyone. This is applies to everything. You can't paint people with a broad brush.
True. All right. So both of us, having come from these Catholic schools, you got to be rooting for these nuns, right?
Completely. I mean,
absolutely rooting for these nuns. And then they get screwed by this con man, Ronnie Crabb. He goes off and joins Belgian far-right politics and has his own little thing. The bishop, we won't even get into him, but just assume he is what you would assume of a bishop of that time. And finally, though, I would like to give you at least one good point of how this story goes and has a nice, sweet ending for two nuns. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. So remember Mother Superior, Sister Anna?
Yes.
And you remember the snitch, Sister Clara?
I think snitch is a strong word.
It's all right.
She snitched. Moral backbone.
I appreciate what she did.
Yeah.
But she snitched. Okay, I ain't gonna double talk it.
True.
So she went to the Bishop of Bruges, but the reason why she snitched, and this is where your instincts are solid, it was out of love. Mm-hmm. She was looking to protect the other sisters. She saw them losing sight of their mission, and specifically one nun in particular. Can you guess who? No, not the 93-year-old Sister Agnes. Sister Anna, the Mother Superior, and the novice had a thing. So it turns out that the Bishop of Bruges asked the nuns to return to the fold. They would then be barred from returning to their convent, of course. And he would split them up and send them to different convents. And then Sister Anna's like, uh-uh. There is no question down in, you know, this is a quote from Sister Anna. She says, there is no question in Paysan, which is the little town outside of Tarbes where their castle was, we found perfect happiness. We don't care at all about the lack of comfort in our new home. We feel closer to the Lord there than to Bruges. So they actually got to have their spiritual awakening and complete harmony with the Lord. So they got that. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, the heart also got what the heart wanted. The nuns who were returned, you know, to the pair of apartments, they're fine. Sister Agnes passes away. But Sister Anna, the Mother Superior, she rekindled her friendship with a woman named Guillaumine Lambrex. And the reason you haven't heard that name is Guillaumine Lambrex is the name of Sister Clara after she left the Order of the Poor Clares.
Wow.
She leaves the nunnery. She goes out and she buys a house. She gets this house, a little farmhouse out on the edge. It's right next to this small stream, a picturesque place. And it's in the heart of the Ardennes forest. And so she is there. And who goes to join her? Sister Anna.
I love that.
Mother Superior and the novice end up together in a small little farmhouse next to a stream in the Ardennes, and they get to enjoy that life together.
That's so lovely. I'm so happy for them.
So, what is our ridiculous takeaway from this story?
I think the ridiculous takeaway would be it's ridiculous to mess with some nuns.
You can only push a woman so far, and you can only push a nun half as far as that.
Exactly.
Now, personally, I think the Catholic Church needs to recognize that the nuns are the best thing they got going. And it's ridiculous that they keep thinking that anybody wants to give a F about the priests, because I'm telling you what, the nuns are the only way you're going to save that church.
Well, they're living the truth of it. They're actually living it out of being really dedicated to social justice. Mm-hmm. And
they're the real deal. They're living according to the, you know, the beliefs of the church.
Well, and the core of, like, I think every religious belief is just to love, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, aside from the nuns who are mean and throw things at you in class if you're muttering in the back of the room, I don't know, hypothetically, you know, the truth is it's just love, right? And mm-hmm. they want to serve. They want to serve others out of love. And so you see, like, Clara doing that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So she went with her beliefs, and then it turned out it worked.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Now, just to put a fine point on all of this, a couple of years back, I was at the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues.
And
I got to see Gloria Steinem talk, right? And she said something that has stuck with me ever since then. She basically compared. She said, you know the big trick that the priest did, right? Now, me and everybody listening were like, no, what's the big trick the priest did? She's like, they stole motherhood from women. You're like, what? How does that work? And she says, think about it. You walk into a church, there is the outer vestibule, inner vestibule, and then there is the long central channel leading up to an altar, right? That's mm-hmm. the form of a church. What does that sound like? A vagina. Outer labia, inner labia, a central canal leading to an altar where the consecration of life occurs, right? Uh-huh. But in this place, we have men in skirts promising to give life after life, which is more important than the life that you were given by your actual mother. I was like, whoa, that's crazy, Gloria Steinem. But it stuck with me. And I'm not necessarily saying she's right, but if you think about that, that has been like the priest's whole thing forever. He's been basically trying to take the power of women and make it their own power and being like, oh, and then these nuns are like, uh-uh. Yeah. I love them for it.
Okay.
Now that is ridiculous.
You win. That is ridiculous.
Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Zarin Burnett.
And I am Elizabeth Dutton.
You can find us online at Ridiculous Crime on Twitter and Instagram. Or if you got a tip for us about a ridiculous crime that you'd like to hear about, or maybe one that you've committed, we want to hear about it. So you can write to us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Until next time.
Catch you later. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. It's produced and edited by Dave Kustin. The theme song is by Thomas Lee and Travis Dutton. The executive producers are Ben Bolin and Noel Brown.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Stephanie J. Block.
And I'm Mary Lee Fairbanks.
And we host Stages Podcast.
Binge close to 100 episodes. Hear the inside stories from backstage and behind the scenes as we go beyond the resume and into the heart of creativity and what it really takes to be in the business of show business.
Don't miss our chats with this season's Tony nominees. If you love theater and entertainment, you are going to love Stages Podcast.
Subscribe to Stages Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts and visit us at stagespodcast.net.